Back in 2024, cybercriminals executed a groundbreaking deepfake heist in Hong Kong, stealing approximately $25 million US. The scam began with a phishing email that appeared to be from the company's UK-based CFO, requesting a confidential transaction. The criminals staged a video conference using deepfake technology to simulate the CFO and other C-level colleagues. The only real participant in the meeting was a finance employee in Hong Kong who was convinced by the realistic visuals and voices to authorize 15 transfers to fraudulent accounts. The heist remains one of the most brazen and innovative deepfake scams of modern times, but of course it is not the only one. Welcome to a world where you truly cannot believe anything you see. I'm Steve Prentice. And this is the Talis Security Sessions podcast. To help us understand what it means to be surrounded by media and information that may or may not be the real thing, I am joined today by Jason Keenahan, Director of Product Management for Talis Identity and Access Management Portfolio. At least, that's who he says he is. Let's give it a listen.
Thanks, Steve. My name is Jason Keenahan, and I'm the Director of Product Management for Talis's Identity and Access Management Portfolio.
All right, that's good enough for me. Jason, welcome to the Talis Security Sessions podcast.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Jason, we are dealing with a relatively recent innovation in criminal technologies. I mean, people have been forging checks and duplicating debit cards for years, and confidence tricksters are as old as humanity itself. But like all things internet and AI enhanced, this seems to take crimes of distraction to a whole new level. Is the Hong Kong heist still a benchmark? Is it the best and most topical example to use?
I think it's still very much a topical example to use, for sure. I think it's something that, even though it's familiar, maybe been communicated a lot, I think it's still something that is a good exemplar of the types of risks, or maybe the extreme side as well, when you talk about $25 million, right? But the risks associated with deepfakes.
So this particular deepfake video involved a number of people, and the quality of the video and the sounds was sufficient to make the employee believe this was the real thing. So is that the level of sophistication we can expect from everybody right now, or was that an outlier of sorts?
I think that's just a stage of that's where we're at. I mean, the technology that is available today really puts the power of generative AI tooling into everybody's hands. And so I think you have things now that you don't have to create either static images or even static video files that you then upload. These kind of transformation technologies are available in real time, as you're pointing out. I mean, even just think of if you've got kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews that are on Snapchat today, right? They're using filters through their videos and their interactions, and that's in a live way, restructuring the images in real time that are being sent.
Do you have any other examples of notable deepfake crimes?
We've had one of our customers that is in North America. So they're a large multinational retail bank. About a year ago, they started seeing an uptick in the amount of new account opening fraud. Now, typically a bank, as a part of their KYC process, like the know your customer process, they, for regulatory purposes, I mean, they have to do some kind of identity proofing or verification about who the user is that's trying to open a new account, right? But the bank's original identity proofing solutions that were tied to this online registration process, they just weren't catching these attacks and they weren't sure what was going on. And then it wasn't until these new accounts started being looked at from their fraud department through actual manual processes that they were starting to see some anomalies. And then when they started actually looking at some of the material, they were realizing that they were actually deepfake attacks. Now, obviously, doing manual checks doesn't scale, and you ultimately want to stop the attacks in real time because you don't want to have to go back and roll back the effects afterwards. And that's when the bank contacted us as well to try to see, how could we help them through the process? But it was kind of interesting because when you looked at the samples that they showed to the human eye, they were very obviously, in this case, very obviously not real. But the technology that was in place at the time was not able to detect them. So the deep fakes were good enough a year ago to be able to circumvent the traditional identity verification tooling that they had in place. I think the thing is now the technology has advanced so far that even the human eye can't discern what is deep fake versus real.
So that's an interesting point right there, in the sense that we've gone kind of full circle. Now, a year or so later, the human eye or ear cannot detect a deep fake, and so we're turning to technology to identify real from fake. It's my understanding that AI can assist in deep fake detection, for example, detecting unnatural eye blinking, mismatched lighting, skin texture inconsistency, or boundary artifacts around faces. And similarly, audio has flaws or maybe sound artificially smooth and perfect. And there's also, of course, metadata and other sort of contextual clues baked into the actual media. But this all relies a great deal on the quality of the media itself, as well as intuition, human intuition. For example, humans are very good at videos that may be very suspicious in their timing or aberrant behavior. Is this just another cat and mouse game where the bad actors can compensate for the flaws in deepfakes and make them even better?
Actually, it's funny that you say that because I always use the term cat and mouse. Exactly, because whether it's fraud detection or cybersecurity in general, whether it's the defenders or the attackers, everybody's trying to get a leg up on their opponent in this case. And it's no different with deepfakes, to be honest, right? I think ultimately, when you close one door or you're able to detect one specific pattern, then the attack vectors are going to change. They're going to adapt, and the defenses are going to have to adapt. And that's why ultimately I say that there's not going to be one universal kind of protection technology that will be able to, with 100% certainty, protect you against these deep fakes. You kind of really need to continue to evolve and also bring different technologies together.
So, multiple sources of verification. What would you prescribe? If an organization, a bank for example, says, okay, we understand that there isn't one single universal deepfake detector, what would be the steps or the different resources that you would advise them to consider and maybe introduce into their culture?
So, if you're specifically concerned about deepfakes, which we should be, one of the things that I would recommend is start by looking at the parts of your business processes. So, whether it's internal or even your customer engagements that are going to be most susceptible to these deepfake attacks. And so, what are those? Typically, it's going to be your user onboarding processes, your account recovery processes. Maybe your help desk interactions. So, whether that's for your customers, your business partners, or for your employees. And those are the areas first and foremost that you want to focus on. Now, you won't have a single technology, but that doesn't mean you give up and you don't apply technology. You have to apply technology to this as well. So, look for identity verification tools that have specific capabilities around detecting and preventing deepfake attacks. Now, one of the things that you're starting to see is how do you grade or rank such toolings as well? Like, how effective are they? And this is where organizations like NIST come into play because they actually evaluate different commercial offerings as well and give them rankings or scores on how effective they are. So the technology is one part of it. But the other part, I think, is training, like good old-fashioned cybersecurity training for your workforce or for your customers, even as well, making them aware of that these risks are out there and giving them things to look for to be able to identify.
Well, that's always a sticking point, right? Because that's a culture thing, and organizations aren't always good at recognizing culture change as a tool of defense. In a previous episode of this podcast, we talked with Bruce Hallis about the problems that culture and the human factor present in cybersecurity simply because it is just so human and so malleable. Typically, training comes in a one-off, set it and forget it type of deal. So is there any way this human factor can be made into a more proactive form of defense? Let's say in job descriptions, if you're hiring people for a particular position in an organization or reviewing the performance of the people already there, what can be done? Everybody is a target for deepfake attacks. So what could you do if you were in charge of retooling the hiring and training sectors of an organization? How would you make training more effective to keep people's minds focused on the fact that everything they look at any time might be fake?
That's a great question. It's kind of difficult to answer. I mean, one thing I would say is that this is kind of the world that we live in now, kind of our digital first world. And it's not just the business context, it's our personal lives as well, right? I mean, I have two teenage daughters and they are 18 and 16 years old. They are online constantly, right? So whether they're on Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, Discord, Reddit, whatever, you name it. And as a parent, I always try to emphasize to them, never trust anything at face value that they're seeing online or in social media. You have to have this kind of healthy dose of skepticism and challenge the sources of your information or challenge what you're seeing. And honestly, that same principle, that skill that we require in our personal lives, we really need to bring that into the workplace as well. And that will serve us towards this idea of protecting against deepfakes, social engineering attacks in general.
Maybe we need something that is dynamic, that literally moves to a different part of the screen, almost getting in people's way. Like those big warnings that come with external emails, a big yellow banner that says this is coming from an external source, they have a powerful message, but after a few emails, they become almost invisible. They never change.
Yeah.
So coming back to deepfake technology itself, how easy is it to create deepfakes now? Like you and I have been talking back and forth for a few minutes. How easy would it be for you to capture my voice and my face in a way that would be credible and would make a good deepfake video that does not arouse suspicion? How many seconds or minutes do you need?
Honestly, for capturing like the sound bites, it's maybe 3 to 5 seconds worth of audio that you need. For the video, it's even less. I mean, you can even do it with if you've got a good crisp image, unobstructed, you can take a still picture and apply that to a video to be able to create a realistic deepfake. If you have the opportunity to move your head and you pivot your head around until you get a couple of different angles, that's going to make it even just that much more effective.
And in your experience looking at deepfakes, don't you get a sense that they're kind of too AI-like? Like perhaps they are overly smooth or too perfect or a bit sterile or neutral in their delivery?
I think it depends. It depends on, like with anything, it depends on the tools that you use. I mean, there's a range of free mobile apps that you can go and download from the app stores. And I mean, the purpose for those is likely more entertainment value or things like that. So they don't have to be 100% perfect. But you can actually go, and if you purchase a $200 a month subscription to a professional service, not necessarily for the purposes of doing fraud or being an attacker, but for legitimate marketing reasons, as an example, you can create very, very high quality images, videos, voice that, again, will be very easy to fool the human eye or the human ear.
So, okay, it appears that with the more expensive apps, we can give up hope on being able to detect deepfakes by manually picking out those typical deepfake clues. Yeah. Just kind of like those big M dashes in text written by ChatGPT.
Yeah. Yeah, or six fingers or three arms. Yeah, exactly.
So the low-skilled criminals and script kiddies, people who are going to be stupid and clumsy, are going to go for this. But a lot of others are going to be really smart about using this technology. So what about some sort of MFA concept? Like, if I receive a video from you, or I'm on a video chat with you, can we not just implement some kind of 2FA or MFA system where people must, as part of their job, go around and do a secondary confirmation before acting on what they see on a video call? As a matter of fact, that's what they did in the Hong Kong heist. The employee who eventually sent the money, the first deep fake video that they received, they said, no, can't do it. It's not a policy of ours to have one person send this amount of money, which is why the multi-officer Zoom call was pulled together. So there was a little bit of due diligence and care on the part of this individual that just got overwhelmed by the sheer scale of the second round, the multi-person Zoom call. So would a 2FA kind of thing, a separate password, would that be economically or ergonomically impractical to deploy?
I think it's feasible. It kind of depends, I think, on the nature of the interaction. Ultimately, what you're suggesting there is, how do I get a level of trust that the individual that I'm interacting with actually is the individual that I think I'm interacting with?
Yeah.
NFA is definitely a potential option there, but then you have to have trust in that NFA source that you're asking for as well. You know, within a workplace, maybe that's possible. But when you start talking about different organizations working together, then that brings in some other elements that have to come into the mix. Now, there are also technologies where you could inject an agent inside of Zoom or Teams or WebEx to sit there and actually watch the attendees too, listen, and be able to detect deepfakes in real time as well.
That sounds like the cat back on top of the mouse. So that's good to know. I mean, it's hard enough to get people to change their passwords every couple of weeks. I can't imagine winning people over to do some sort of social MFA in order to confirm everything going on.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that would be the challenge, for sure.
So what about liability? When someone like that Hong Kong bank falls for a deepfake, because that would motivate directors and shareholders a lot more. In the case of the Hong Kong bank, neither the bank itself nor the employee were held liable. And liability itself appears difficult to assign because of the anonymity of the perpetrators, the difficulty in proving the authenticity of the fraudulent content, and an absence of liability for the AI tool providers, at least in this specific case, since there appears to be no duty of care to the world at large to prevent fraud committed by others by your product, at least not yet. So for as long as this is not a controllable crime, where does the blame get assigned?
Well, I don't think we're going to get to a point where nobody can control it. I mean, in effect, when we look at the deepfake technology, it becomes another attack vector that we have to be able to protect against. It's not going to go away, but I mean, obviously, it's definitely getting headlines now and has prevalence. But we as an industry need to be able to provide the protection mechanisms for organizations to protect themselves and to protect their users, their stakeholders as well. So I think no different from anybody that creates a fraudulent driver's license or a fraudulent passport or something along those lines that you use for identity verification for an onboarding process or for an authentication. I think it's the same types of liability that come into play there.
It does become a bit of a challenge in emotional terms. You used the word trust earlier when we were talking about trusting who we were seeing on a video chat screen. Now, I still see trust as more of an emotion-driven term than the word knowing or knowledge, which is more empirical. So not looking to play word games with you per se, but how can I know that it's you rather than simply trusting that it's you? Seeing that the reality, as you said, these are the times that we live in right now, how can we help people with the despair or confusion they might be feeling? You already mentioned that there are certain tools and agents that you can insert into video chats, but the continuous innovation from the threat actor's side means that there are no limits to what they can come up with. And as is so often the case, they do this faster than the rest of us can keep pace.
Wow, I feel like that's more of a philosophical or psychological question than just a cybersecurity one, to be honest.
Well, it is. I can understand that. But I guess we could say that as human beings, we do always persevere. We always find a way, or at least try to find a way.
Yeah.
So, okay, putting aside the humans for a moment, what do you expect next in terms of deepfake technology? I mean, people think now about deepfakes as either being a video or a voice. So what comes next?
I think one of the things that we see coming down the line isn't just around the physical interactions, because right now deepfakes are used to create physical representations. So that's where you get the videos or photographs, images, voice, etc. But really, where I see kind of the next wave going is around AI agents. Now, we talked about agents going into, say, like, a Zoom conference call and stuff. But really, this concept of having non-human activity basically becoming the foundation for business interactions as we move forward. So I have these non-human agents acting on my behalf to be able to go and perform tasks or, request information or take actions. So now a big challenge for the industry will be being able to discern legitimate non-humans from illegitimate non-humans as well. So that's not really deep fakes necessarily, but it is a way of actually challenging the traditional interactions online. And again, how do you have trust or knowledge, as you said, that these interactions are legitimate?
That's again, it's a sort of an amazing open horizon of potential, but not in a positive way. We've been looking at deepfakes solely as a tool of crime so far. Is there a way we can find a positive spin on this? Are there opportunities for us to use these same technologies for normal human behaviors? Is there any need for deepfakes at all on the quote-unquote good side of business?
I think so. First, I would say I would maybe change the question a little bit, because I think even just calling it deep fakes automatically has a negative connotation in the communication there. So I'd rephrase it more like, what are the opportunities to use generative AI technology for business or for legitimate purposes as we go forward? And there, I think the possibilities are limitless. But if we just focus on things like creating realistic voices or images or videos, I see that being used in marketing. I'm seeing it being used in internal communications, even in learning and research. I can actually think of one example. So, in my role, I lead a team of 20 plus product managers and UX designers. And a couple of weeks ago, I held a brown bag session for my team where I got everybody together and I wanted them to share what are the types of AI-powered tools that they are using to improve their productivity or their efficiency at work. One of my PMs was sharing that he was trying to do a research on the topic of AI agents, which I was just talking about. And there's a ton of academic research that's emerged over the last 6 to 9 months, but he doesn't like to read reams of academic papers and this very formal languages and stuff. So he uploaded all of it to a chatbot assistant, and the tool summarized all of that content and then outputted a summary in a 20-minute interactive podcast. So in this podcast, and I was listening to it, and there was actually a couple of different voices. And so it wasn't just like one person speaking, like in this very robotic voice. It was very conversational in the way that it was being delivered. And I was totally flabbergasted, right? I mean, it was crazy, to be honest, to just hear how realistic this sounded. And then from the standpoint of being able to then use that to very rapidly consume and learn on a new subject matter that was customized to his particular purpose, I think it was fascinating.
I could see how conversations with manufactured voices would be of great benefit, not only to summarize reports in a more engaging way, but in other resource-intensive activities like onboarding, maybe training staff, or providing staff support.
Exactly.
So lots of good opportunities in the terms of using deepfake technology without it being fake, but at least being sufficiently deep and intelligent to animate conversations, voices, and perhaps even faces too. So that's a good way to end off this episode in terms of talking about positive developments. This has been an absolute treat, Jason, to talk to you on this level. So thank you so much for joining me here today on the Talis Security Sessions podcast.
Thanks, Steve.
Remember, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Talis Security Sessions podcasts. Not just for the next episode, but for our valuable and thorough collection of past ones. All on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. We will be back again soon with another timely discussion. And until then, I'm Steve Prentice. Really. Thanks for listening.